Giles versus Barnhart. Mr. Schultz.
Good morning, Your Honors. Barry Schultz on behalf of the plaintiff, Denise Giles, for her minor son, Damien. In supplemental security income disability claims for adults, question is whether the adult is capable of sustaining work. In children's SSI cases, the focus isn't on the ability to work, but on the severity of limitations caused by the child's impairments. If a child is markedly limited in two what are called domains or areas of functioning out of six possible domains, then that's considered the functional equivalent of meeting a listing of impairments, and the child is to be found disabled. The ALJ in this case found that Damien was markedly limited in the domain of acquiring and using information. And the plaintiff has claimed throughout that he also was markedly limited in the domain of attending and completing tasks. The ALJ's primary error is that her decision does not, it's a general error, but she does not build a logical bridge between the evidence and her conclusion that Damien was not markedly limited in that domain.
How long ago was the hearing before the ALJ?
It was 2002, October of 2002.
I mean, I get, it seemed to me that he was making progress with the treatment he was receiving, and was he now 13 or about 13?
Yes, he'll be 13 this year.
15?
No, he'll be 13 this 13. Year. That's correct. I have 2 points on that. He made some progress, but in fact, the progress he was making was still less than an average student. In the 3 years between the two tests, he had tests in 99 and testing in 2002. In several of the categories, he only improved 1 year to 1.5 years in a two and a half year time period. So whereas an average student would improve 2.5 years in a 2.5 year period, Damien only improved 1 to 1.5 years. He was still getting special education services. But primarily the ALJ does not, there's several teacher reports in this case where the special education teachers state that Damien constantly needed reminding to stay on task, that he needed constant supervision to complete his assignments, and actually in 2002, the more recent teacher reports, that he constantly, needed constant monitoring in order to remain focused, even to process the instructions that were given him. Now, the ALJ doesn't mention any of that evidence, and that's the most significant evidence in terms of the severity of the limitation in this domain. The ALJ doesn't rely on any opinion that Damien was not markedly limited. Now, the commissioner points to the state agency psychologist's opinions, but the ALJ doesn't rely on those opinions in reaching her conclusion, so this court should not affirm her decision based on those opinions. That's particularly important in this case because those doctors provided an opinion based on the old regulations. They didn't review Damien's case in light of the six domains that were in existence at the time of the ALJ's decision and on which the ALJ reached her conclusion. In addition, the ALJ doesn't cite any specific report in her decision. At one point, she makes a statement concerning the limitations Damien has, and then she just cites Exhibits 56 through 61. Well, that's about 60 to 70 pages of detailed school records. This court would have to go through that 60 to 70 pages in order to try to decide if the ALJ's statements are accurate or not. This court should not do that, should not have to do that. That was the ALJ's job to cite the specific evidence in the case.
I understand, Schultz, and it certainly would make it easier for us. But if one were to do that and they were to be supportive of the conclusions of the ALJ, even though it would have been helpful to have them in the body of the opinion, does that suffice? If that record supports it.
No, it does not. In this court's opinions in Steele versus Barnhart and Golombuski versus Barnhart, the court adopts for the Social Security field the general principles originally set forth by the Supreme Court in the Chenery case, that an administrative agency's decisions are only to be affirmed by the court based on the facts and theories relied on by the agency. So the fact that there might be some facts in the record which support the ALJ's decision, since the ALJ didn't herself rely on those facts, this court should not affirm her decision on that basis. In addition, kind of going along the same lines, the ALJ's found Damien markedly limited in the one domain, and then she makes the statement, in all other domains, he's less than markedly limited. She doesn't address the specific domain of attending and completing tasks. The regulations include a two-page single-spaced description of what the ALJ is supposed to consider within this particular domain. The ALJ doesn't address that description. She doesn't analyze the evidence in light of that description. It's actually impossible to tell from her decision which domain she's referring to when she makes these varying comments about what the mother testified to. The most glaring error in the plaintiff's opinion is that the ALJ notes that the claimant was not diagnosed with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. There's no reason for the ALJ to make that finding unless she thought it was relevant to her decision. But there's no evidence in this record that it is relevant to her decision. There's no evidence that a claimant cannot suffer from serious attention problems without a diagnosis of ADHD. The ALJ doesn't cite to any evidence which suggests that that's the case. This case, this court has held in a series of cases, Scott and Brindisi and Steele and Barnett and last year's case of Ribideau, that for the listings of impairments, the ALJ has to either mention the specific relevant listings or at least has to provide an analysis of the evidence in light of the listing. Well, in the child scheme for SSI cases, these domains, there are listings for children, but the domains serve the same function as the listing. And plaintiff urges this court to extend those cases to apply to this issue of the domains to require an ALJ to at least address the specific domains and analyze the evidence in light of those domains. And finally, in the case of Stambaugh versus Sullivan, this court's indicated that an ALJ really should, except under limited circumstances, have some type of expert evaluation where there are mental impairments involved. And again, in this case, we have teacher evaluations that Damien constantly needed reminding and monitoring to remain focused. There's no opinion that the ALJ relied on indicating that he had a less than severe impairment in this area. And yet the ALJ goes on her own to reach this conclusion. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Schultz. Ms. Pedersen?
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. Danielle Pedersen on behalf of the Commissioner of Social Security. As a purely administrative matter, I am under an obligation to inform you this morning that effective January 20th, 2007, Linda S. McMahon replaced Joanne Barnhart and is now the Acting Commissioner of Social Security. Pursuant to Federal Rule of Appellant Procedure 43C2, she should be substituted as the defendant in this case. This is an unusual case in terms of child's cases that this court has likely seen, in that typically when this court sees a child's case, the situation is that the child was found disabled under the old standard and was then found not disabled when we revised the standard and made that standard more stringent. This is a different case. This is a medical improvement case. In this case, DG, the minor child, was found disabled at age one in 1995 because of severe mobility problems at that time. He actually had to have, I believe, both hips dislocated and his legs turned and set so that he could gain full mobility. He also had severe speech and language problems at that time. And in fact, his speech was unintelligible even up until he was approximately age three or four. That is, those are the primary impairments upon which he was found disabled. because of continuing disability review, the agency determined in November of 1997 that DG's benefits would cease because he had medically improved. Specifically, he had achieved normal mobility. He no longer has any motor difficulties, fine or gross, and also his significant speech and language problems, while they were still in existence, were responding very well to the physical therapy and the special education that he was receiving. Now, as opposing counsel has already stated, the ALJ did find in this case that DG had a marked impairment in the domain of acquiring and using information. And that's the domain that deals with this child's primary impairments. He has a learning disability. He has problems processing information. He has both receptive and expressive language problems. This child has been receiving special education services for these cognitive problems and his speech and language problems since he was a year old. That is the impairment for which he has been consistently receiving services and for which he has consistently been receiving treatment. That is the impairment that is found to be marked. The ALJ reasonably concluded, in contrast, that while DG did have significant problems, likely stemming from these cognitive problems, with his attention and his ability to sustain focus, that limitation was not as severe as these cognitive problems and these speech and language problems, and that impairment was therefore less than marked. The ALJ's decision is supported by substantial evidence in the record. As the court has already noted, this child was improving greatly with services. He was receiving special education, both pull-out and in the classroom, and the child was making progress in all of his goals. That is noted throughout the IEP reports and by the different multidisciplinary team members.
But specifically, when you look at the ALJ's opinion, in terms of not paying attention and completing a task, there's not a lot in there to address to that specific issue, is there?
Judge, this decision could have certainly, as I think most ALJ decisions, could have contained more elaboration. The judge, however, considering the considerable size of the record in this case, the judge did hit on all the main issues and the main points of all the domains, including attending to and completing tasks. With specificity, he noted that the child was not had not been diagnosed with an attention condition, and had also was not receiving any treatment or any special services for those attention problems. The ALJ specifically addressed that the child was able to groom and dress himself, and those are specific factors to be taken into consideration under this domain. Now, I want to address two sort of more legal points I think that opposing counsel has raised. The first one being that this idea that he wants this court to extend its reasoning in cases like Scott and Brindisi to say that the ALJ is under some obligation to state with the same specificity the findings with respect to the functional equivalence of the listings as they are with respect to meeting or equaling the listings. Well, I would first respectfully state that I believe this ALJ did meet the requirements of Scott and Brindisi, even had this been a listing case. Those cases do not say what opposing counsel would have you believe they say. This court knows that full well. Those cases said that the judge must make it clear what listing he's evaluating and must analyze the facts in the framework of that listing. In this case, the ALJ did set forth what domains he was considering. He actually went through a very lengthy recitation at the beginning of the various domains. He indicated how each domain has certain abilities and activities that are necessary. He cited all the necessary regulations. It was very clear that he was considering all five relevant domains. He cited them several times. And he did analyze the evidence in this case in the framework of those domains. And therefore, he did not run afoul of this court's edict in Scott or Brindisi or the cases along those same lines. Furthermore, none of those cases extended the reasoning to a functional equivalent situation, and we would ask the court not to do that here. Mr. Schultz has argued that the functional equivalence is the same thing as meeting or equaling a listing, and we respectfully disagree with that. If you compare the child's process to the adult's process, the functional equivalence to a listing is actually more similar to the RFC assessment and that step 4 and 5 part of the adult standard. It's not the same thing as meeting or equaling a listing. Meeting or equaling a listing is a medical determination that must be based solely on medical evidence And that is not the case with a functional equivalence analysis. It is not the same. It is not a per se finding of disability. It is an analysis of the functional limits of the child, very much like we evaluate the functional limits of an adult by assessing their RFC. And we ask you not to equate the two and extend the case law as opposing counsel has suggested that you do. Certainly the ALJ in this case could have elaborated on this case much further. Again, based on the size of the record, the ALJ could have written a very, very lengthy decision. But what is required is that the ALJ provide sufficient articulation to allow this court to trace the path of her reasoning. And she did that in this case. She explained why she contrasted the marked limitations in the domain of acquiring and using information with the less than marked limitations in these other areas of functioning. And again, the keys here are the absence of any treatment or special services for these other domains, the fact that the child was improving significantly with special services and making progress towards all goals. One of the words that kind of gets tossed around both in my opponent's brief and this morning is that the child was still functioning below average. The child was still not up to speed with children of the same age. That's absolutely something we concede, and the ALJ conceded that. The ALJ did not find this child was not limited in terms of his attention and concentration. In fact, a less than marked is still up near the middle of the scale. It's not saying the child didn't have impairments. Certainly, he did. What the ALJ reasonably found, based on this record as a whole, is that those attention difficulties were not as severe as these long-standing language and speech problems and this significant cognitive problems he was experiencing. And that was a reasonable determination by the ALJ based on this record. And the ALJ did, in this case, provide you with sufficient reasoning that you can trace that path and see what she was finding with respect to those different issues.
Ms. Pedersen, the ALJ noted that Damien had not been assessed as having an attention deficit disorder.
Yes.
Was that and obviously did not, you know, add that to his side of the equation. And was that an appropriate conclusion to make, a medical conclusion to make?
It was a truthful assessment to make. There is no diagnosis of...
That he had not been.
Correct. There is no diagnosis of an attention.
She concluded the absence of it. I mean.
Absolutely. There has been no diagnosis made, and that is all the ALJ said. There has been no diagnosis of ADHD. The ALJ did not say, because there's no diagnosis of ADHD, this child can't possibly really be limited in terms of his attention and concentration. That is not what he said. That is my opponent reading something into the ALJ's decision that is not there. This court will give the ALJ's decision a commonsensical reading, I am confident, and find that that is not what the ALJ indicated. The ALJ was noting one factor among many, one of which being that this child has not been diagnosed with an attention deficit problem, and more importantly, has not been receiving treatment, either medication or special services, for those attention deficits. That was a proper consideration by the ALJ. It was certainly not his only consideration. There were several other factors that he properly addressed, and we would ask the court not to read more into that statement by the ALJ than she intended. For these reasons, we would ask the court to affirm the commissioner's decision that DG was no longer disabled as of November 1997 and no longer entitled to SSI benefits at that time.
Thank you, Ms. Betters.
Thank you.
Mr. Schultz.
I think it's important to consider the fact that attention in this case isn't an impairment. The impairment is learning disability. The limitations in attention are just that. They're symptoms of this claimant's impairment of learning disability. So the fact that Damien didn't receive special services for his attention, well, he wasn't diagnosed with a specific attention impairment. It's a symptom of his learning disability, and he was certainly getting treatment for this entire time for his learning disability. Plaintiff would like to refer the court to page 514 of the record when the court has a chance to look at it, because that's April of 2002, some of the more recent school records, where again the classroom observation included that Damien had a great deal of difficulty staying focused on a task and needed constant monitoring in order to hear and process instructions. ALJ doesn't address this very significant evidence, and it's the only way for the ALJ to determine the severity of Damien's limitations in the domain of attending and completing tasks is to look at the evidence that addresses the severity, and she doesn't do that in this case. And one final thing, yes, there's evidence that Damien was improving, but this page 514, where Damien is still having these significant problems, comes from the same report in which the teacher indicates that he's improving. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Schultz. Thanks to both counsel. Case is taken under advisement.